If I'd known Apple stocks would do that, I would have bought them at the beginning. Or as you learn when you move to Illinois, if I'd known driving through Chicago would add 2 hours to my trip, I would have gone around. Or if I'd known she was carrying the Messiah, I would have given up my own bed. Hindsight is 20/20, and learning from past experiences is key. And sometimes those are your experiences, but even better is when they're someone else's. Isn't it better when we can learn from someone else's mistake instead of having to make the mistake yourself? Today, this experience of the innkeeper is going to remind us, and I pray remind you, of your need to make room this Christmas. So let's take a look together, Luke chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, as we see our opening point here. It says this: in those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be registered, each to his own town. And Joseph of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. Now, when I first was writing this message, I was going to skip verses 1 and 2. Because who cares? You care. Let me tell you why. These historical details actually are really important, and I learned this week. Now, Caesar Augustus, he actually was the adopted son of Julius Caesar. And after Julius Caesar died, Caesar Augustus kind of pulled power together, but it was always kind of a struggle. And so when he would do things like have a registration of the entire world, is him saying, hey, I'm in charge. But verse 2 was long held as an example of biblical inaccuracy. Quirinius was governor of Syria and oversaw a registration in 7 AD. And as a result, knowing that Jesus was born before 7 AD, it was long held that this was an example of biblical inaccuracy. You might say, well, it's just a date, but if it's not trustworthy, then how do you trust the rest of it? But then there was documentation found in the early 20th century that showed that Quirinius was governor of Syria twice. And notice what verse 2 says. It says the first registration. Quirinius did it twice. And so it's part of the first one. So once again, you might say small detail, but listen, once again, the Bible checks out. That's important. That's important because whenever people think the Bible is inaccurate, they scream it from the rooftops. But when the Bible checks out, you don't see a retraction. So let's make sure we understand when we read this. My prayer for you is that you see not Bible characters. I try to be very careful not to say, let's talk about this Bible character, because they're not made up stories. These are historical accounts. Mary and Joseph were real people who went through things that I hope are going to be fresh to you this year of what they really went through. But each of these people are called to go to their own hometown. And so Mary and Joseph at this time are living in Nazareth, and they had to travel to Bethlehem for two reasons. One of them was because the law said they had to. You got to go back to your hometown. We need to check out where you are because they couldn't just, you know, pull together the computer records. They weren't the DMV, you know, or someone really got their act together. And so they had to get this stuff together. So part of it was because the law said so, but the other part of it is because God had said so. Micah chapter 5, verse 2. This prophecy says, "But you, Bethlehem, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times." This was a prophecy given after things had fallen apart with David. So this was kind of a big deal that Bethlehem would be held up as this big, huge place. And so if Jesus had still lived his entire ministry, done all the things we saw, but wasn't born in Bethlehem, then a promise of God would have fallen apart. I'm sorry. And if one promise of God falls apart, then how do you trust any of the others? So here you see it was important that Mary and that Joseph would go to Nazareth. Otherwise, everything could have been called into question. So it says that they traveled from Nazareth in the north down to Bethlehem. And I read the account of James Strange. He's a professor of biblical archaeology. He takes annual trips to Israel and takes students over there. And he says, you know, when you see Mary and Joseph, and he's leading, you know, a camel or whatever Mary's riding on, you know, it looks just so romantic, so great. Oh, look, he's just leading his girl along on a camel or whatever it was. No. Professor Strange says, take that, ball that up, and throw that away. It was about 70 to 90 miles from Nazareth down to Bethlehem, depending on what route you took, and all of them were terrible. It says that they went up, but when you look on the map, they were going down. But if you were walking along, you were going up. Professor Strange says that there are so many elevation changes as you go up. And that normally, kind of in this time, you could make maybe 20 miles a day. But with Mary, in those conditions, it was probably 10 miles a day. So they were on the road for at least a week. And he says, if you go over to Israel during this time, it's 30 degrees during the day. It rains constantly, and then everything freezes at night. It says, also, ancient documents have been found that warned as you were getting into the Jordan wilderness, you had to watch out for the three B's: bears, boars, and bandits. So it was not an easy place to travel through. And so it's so easy to think, oh, you know, they went down. Because usually, I'll be honest, when I was a kid, I thought they just got there like in a day. Because whenever we would travel somewhere, you got there in a day. Hopped in the car, sometimes it was a long trip, but you still got there in a day. But these folks, Mary and Joseph, are on the road for probably at least a week. Imagine the state of them. Walking, getting into Bethlehem, totally exhausted, dirty, muddy, cold, and ready just to lay down inside something with walls. I mean, after this trip that they've taken, they're desperate for rest, and they find out there's no room for them. It's not hard for me to imagine Joseph standing before the innkeeper and going, please, please. I mean, look at her. Please. I found in my life growing up, sometimes please is all you have left. Sometimes it's all you can get out. And so I begin to ask, does the please of a human being move you? Does it move your heart? When we wrapped up Hebrews 13:3 reminded us that we need to hurt with people who are hurting. Now that doesn't mean you say you know how they're feeling if you don't know how they're feeling. But you try to put yourself into their shoes. You don't go, boy, I'm glad that wasn't me. But you say, what could I do? Christ requires responsiveness. Absolutely requires it. You would say, how do I get myself into a place where I could help this desperate? I mean, you're going to meet some people this Christmas who are going to be desperate. Some of them don't want you to know, but you know it. And so the question is whether they stand before you and say, please, or you see in them a real please. Are you going to be there? Are you going to care? Those years in seminary were lean years, weren't they, babe? And it was so moving at our seminary when we had one of our professors come and say, all you guys need to give us the names and ages of your kids. Everybody in the school. Everybody give the names and ages of your kids, okay? Why? Because there's a guy who wants to buy gifts. A guy who wants to buy gifts for every child of every seminary student. And the only thing he asks is that he could be there when they open them. And so they had him in a big, huge room, all these gifts, and we all brought our kids in there. And he didn't want thanks, he just wanted to see it. He just wanted to see these kids. You know, we weren't going to go say, hey, you know what, we could use some help with Christmas presents for our kiddos. It's not something you want to ask for, especially for your kids. And then someone comes in and they see the please before you ever utter it. Are you ready to see the pleas that people are maybe asking, or maybe that they're afraid to ask? Because look at Luke chapter 2, verse 6. You just never know. While they were there, the time came for Mary to give birth. The time came. Now, obviously, they didn't have ultrasounds, but they've been having babies long enough, they know when the time's getting close. But they didn't know exactly when. They knew it might happen while she was there, and so finally she's there. She's far away from home. I mean, imagine that. It's something that she gave birth and put her baby in a manger, but it's another thing she did it with, you know, her family's not there. And sometimes you just don't know when an opportunity is going to present itself. I mean, what if we started treating people as if God put them in our day for a reason? What if we started treating people as if God was sovereign and God knew that we were going to be standing in front of that person? This innkeeper was confronted with an unexpected opportunity to care. I very much believe that. He's probably to the point that he's fooled and he's like, boy, I'm going to have people come up to the door. What do I say? How do I get them away quick? Because I've got to take care of the people that are here. It's not that I'm not trying to take care of my people. I can't take care of everybody. But he had this unexpected opportunity to care. And I keep being reminded that Christians are required to expect the unexpected, are we not? If you think that only the things that you expect to happen are going to happen to you, you need to wake up and figure out what God's trying to say, because you need to be prepared to respond as an ambassador of the gospel. And let me tell you, I super know this now. I was in my office, I was writing this point, and I was complaining. And I said, God, this is totally true, and I'm totally going to share this, but I never get to do this. Like, I don't get a chance to really impact people like this. You know, when I first came, we'd have people who would come and come to the church and ask for help. Pretty soon, I figured that that's because we put, there's a new pastor at the church. When you put that on the sign, people come and ask for help. And so, you know, I had a lot of opportunities to kind of have benevolence opportunities to help people, but, you know, we've got a great relationship with One Body Collaborative here in Rockford. They're a great asset. When someone comes in, it's not just us giving them money, but they help people budget and find out so many different ways. So a lot of times someone calls, has a need, we send them to One Body, and One Body helps them out, and I don't hear from them again. So a lot of times it doesn't happen. So I literally said, I'm not making this up, I'm at my desk, and I literally said to God, I never get a chance to help people with benevolence anymore. And then my phone rang. And Darcy said, I've got someone on the line who needs to talk to you. So I take the call, and it's this guy, and his name is Douglas. And Douglas is an over-the-road truck driver. And he says, I'm sorry, I've never done this before. I'm kind of embarrassed, but I've not eaten today, and I'm not going to get a chance to eat tomorrow. And I'm really hungry, and I wonder if you guys could help me out. So I was a little confused by this, and you know, looked, and I saw that he was from Ohio based on his area code, and I said, so what are you doing in McChesney? He's like, you know, I'm delivering here. I'll be here for like an hour, hour and a half, and then I'm going back, but I don't have any money. I actually talked to my mom about this. My mom is an over-the-road truck driver, and I said, Mom, is this like a real thing? And she said, Heath, there are truckers all over the country that are starving. She said, this is a need. There are ministries that try to help truck drivers because they don't have enough money to get home to feed themselves. She said, there are people who will get a meal and they'll post on Facebook or they'll announce on their CB, hey, I've got a hamburger here if somebody wants it. I had no clue. So this was a real need. So he comes and he's making his delivery and I said, okay, I'll meet you over there at such and such time. And so I got a bag and I put some food and I put some water bottles in it. I got some cash because I know that not every truck stop has the same restaurants. I've been enough truck stops. And so I put all this stuff together and I put in a tract called Steps to Peace with God by Billy Graham. It's the best. If you have to use a tract, it's the best one. So I put it in there and I'm waiting. I end up sitting for like a half hour. He texts me, sorry, I'm unloading. I said, no problem. So finally he comes over and his hands are dirty and it's been a half an hour and he's just now super embarrassed because it took so long for him to get over to me. And I said, okay, I'm going to tell you something, Douglas. He did a Google search to typed in McChesney, which that first of all is an accomplishment, typed in McChesney, and our church was the first one that popped up, or the one that he felt like he should call. I said, I want to tell you what was going on. I told him what was happening at my desk. And I said, you were supposed to call me. God wanted you to talk to me today. I said, because there are a lot of churches here, and probably all of them would have helped you. But I know what over-the-road trucking is. I mean, my mom does this. And you just saw him instantly, like, relax. Like, I wasn't embarrassed that his hands were dirty. I know that you can't live on a timetable when you're driving a truck. And I said, Douglas, I want to give something to you. And I gave him the bag, and I said, I'm giving this to you now because I want you to know that everything we talk about from here on out has nothing to do with whether you get this. I said, you're getting this because God's giving it to you. So this isn't anything else. And I said, but I want to ask you, do you know God through his son, Christ? And he said, so I can just be honest with you? I was like, yeah, please. And he's like, I grew up Jehovah's Witness, and I never really understood it. Didn't make much sense. He said, I had a girlfriend, and we went to church together, but we broke up about a year ago, and I haven't been to church since. And I'll just be honest with you, I'm kind of mad at God. And so I just had this opportunity to share the gospel with him, just right there, and asked him if I could pray for him. He said yes, and I knew he had to get back to his truck. He was going to have to get back on the road, but did that, and I said, you know, this is in there. He didn't make a decision for Christ there at the moment. I gave him that tract, and he has my phone number. And you know what? I haven't heard from him, and maybe I never will again. I've learned I don't have to take the responsibility of a person's entire soul on myself, but I do have to take the responsibility the moment that I'm there. You just never know. You might get an opportunity while you're complaining to God that you don't get opportunities. When you became a Christian, that wasn't just for you. God was making you an ambassador. I remember a map at World Changers that always used to move my heart for missions, and they would take the entire world and they would black it out, and they would just make a slight outline of all the continents, and then they would put lights where they knew that there were gospel witnesses, and there was so much darkness still. And you looked, and those were ambassadors, people that were in enemy territory, trying to make an impact. Are you willing to take the hard call? Are you ready to take the hard call from somebody? God just gave this one to me this morning. Is there somewhere that you have been refusing to pick up the phone? Maybe a family member? And you know that no one else in the family can share with them Jesus like you can. You know no one else at work is going to share the gospel with them like you will. But sometimes they're so wearying. They always are so needy. Yeah, people without Jesus are like that. Sometimes people with Jesus can be too, but are we doing what God's calling us to do? Finally, look at verse 7, this idea of making room. So she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. This Christmas, we're being challenged in this first message, and I think it just makes sense that we started here in this idea of making room. Before we look at anything else, I know some of you want to start with Mary, some of you want to start with Joseph, some of you love the shepherds, but we need to start with the innkeeper. Because we need to start with this idea of, are you making room? You know what's interesting to me? When you read the Bible, you actually find the Jewish people to be people of great hospitality. Partly because it was in the law. When you read the law, actually God said if a traveler is coming through, someone needs to take them in. And not just for a night. You had to feed them. You had to protect them. You even were called to involve them if it was a time of festival. They came with your family to the festival. If you had some sort of family party going on, they were invited to that. So caring for strangers, for people coming in, was an expectation of the law. When I was reading a great book called Walking the Bible by Bruce Feiler, it's a pretty contemporary work where he wanted to read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers while he was in Israel. So he'd go to the place and then he would read it there. And he talks about one time he was in this nomadic community, just introduced himself to the people, and they instantly, one family sent their kids to a neighbor's house so that he could have their kid's room. And he's like, no, let your kids stay there. And then he found out that's what that community does. Somebody volunteers to take him in, and they send the kids to the neighbor's house. They're like, this isn't special for you. This is what we do for everybody. We make room. You're not going to sleep out in the desert by yourself. And we don't even know you. And so you see this expectation. Now, there was actually one guest that the Jewish people wait for every year at the Passover. I read this account, a great website, Jews for Jesus. It's a ministry of people who grew up Jewish, who are Jewish, and they found Jesus. And so they tried to impact Jewish people with the gospel. And so a guy named Ephraim Goldstein, if that ain't a Jewish name, I don't know what is. But Ephraim wanted to share this, and I want to share this paragraph with you. He talks about this guest that the Jewish people wait for every year. It says this, every Jewish child who has sat through the Passover meal knows the excitement and expectation that accompanies the filling of the cup of Elijah. The annual drama at the close of the meal has the child going to the door to invite Elijah in. As a child, I remember how exciting it was to open the door and see if the special guest would appear. I even remember getting up early the following morning to see if the cup of Elijah was still on the table and if it had been touched during the night. See, in the Old Testament, there's 18 different examples that Elijah would come before the Messiah. And it didn't mean that Elijah would be reincarnated, but this prophet with the power of Elijah would come and would announce that the Messiah was coming. And Jesus says that that was John the Baptist. That John the Baptist came to prepare the way to make room. And so this Passover meal, which was always celebrating that God had taken them out of Egypt, taken them out of an impossible situation, that God again was going to do the impossible by rescuing their souls through a Messiah and announcing it through Elijah. But listen, there's no longer a reason to make room at the table for Elijah because he's already come. Now it's time to make room in your heart and in your soul for the Messiah because he has come. And he says, I'm who you need. You need to let me in. And these Jewish people, I just say, where was the hospitality for Jesus? I mean, where's the story of the guy who walks out of the inn and says, Mary, you're having a baby. Take my room. Take my bed. Again, if they had known that the Messiah was being born and the innkeeper had gone in and said, hey, the Messiah is being born outside in a trough, could someone swap? Every hand would have gone up. So why didn't anyone go out there? Because they're busy. You're going to hate this part. I'm just telling you right now. Because they were so busy with their own hustle and so busy with their own bustle that they didn't take time, regardless if the Messiah was being born outside or not, but a woman was giving birth in a trough. I know you're busy. We're all innkeepers. We're all busy. We're all full up. Every one of us. And I know you're the busiest. But you're not. Advent is about making room. It's about making room. Making room, even fresh again, that you would say, Jesus, move freely. Jesus, do what you want to do. We get so busy, we talk of Christmas, and we get upset when people don't say Merry Christmas. And then we fail to display the spirit of Christmas. Now, what is the spirit of Christmas? Depends on what show you're watching. But I'm going to tell you, here's what the spirit of Christmas is. It is the celebration and the declaration that God has given the greatest gift. Okay, good. We all agreed. All right. I didn't know how many of you watched like a lot of Hallmark movies. You're like, no, that's not the spirit of Christmas. Spirit of Christmas is this woman owns an inn and this guy moves. Okay, all right. Anyway. That's every Hallmark movie, by the way. But anyway, it's the celebration. You know, thank you for making us sing Glory again. I was actually sitting here going, I wonder if we get this. I'm trying to picture Jesus there. Because I want to celebrate at Christmas. Especially I had so many Christmases that I didn't know who Jesus was anyway. And listen, the Charlie Brown Christmas special is great, but it's not a strong enough gospel witness. We need to go out and to compliment that. Because I watched it for years as a kid. Didn't make any impact on me. In fact, I don't think it's made much impact on the culture. I think maybe we're supposed to do that as Christians. You'll make room for what's important. We did it in our house on Friday. When Nikki and I got married, she brought a fake Christmas tree into our marriage. I don't know if I knew anyway. I put this thing together, and I was like, this is the worst. I'm not sure if putting together is the worst or taking it apart is the worst. There's something really depressing about putting Christmas in a box and then throwing it over the side and color coordinating it. So eventually I convinced her we have to have a real tree. And that's been a tradition now for many years, and we love going out and cutting down our tree. And so we went out on Friday, had to wait all the way till Friday because we're out of town over Thanksgiving, finally cut down our tree. But what did we do before we brought it home? We made room. We know what we got to do. We got to move the dining room table over here a little bit, and we got to move this couch and this chair a little bit closer, and you got to move the love seat over here. You actually got to take an end table and put it downstairs in the basement. But it's totally worth it. It's totally worth it. You could try to shove the tree in there, but then it just feels shoved in. I mean, we like to make room for it. There's the tree. Nikki and I always are. I think this tree, Heath, that tree's 10 feet tall. We need to go a little bit smaller than that. But it doesn't matter how big it is. You're going to make room for it. And so what I feel like God is saying to us this morning is, where are you going to make room this Christmas? Maybe for generosity. Maybe you're seeing, and I appreciate this. You know, I've seen some friends on Facebook that have opportunities to go on a certain trip or something, and like, you know, could you help? Yeah, love to. I'm so glad I know about it. Like, that's one of the things I love about Facebook sometimes. Someone's going on a mission trip. Hey, I can't fund your whole trip, but I'd love to do that. So we can make room for generosity this Christmas, or you can make room for greed. That's what I did as a kid. You know, Calvin and Hobbes is one of my favorite cartoons, and I resonate with Calvin. He always wanted to go out and pick the tree that you could put the most loot under, you know? So I was like, I get you, Calvin. I'm with you. So, I mean, we can make room for generosity. We can make room for greed. But I'm saying we need to make room in our hearts this Christmas for the gospel. Like, we need to be intentional. And you know what that means? You're probably going to have to do a little reorganizing. You may even have to put some stuff down in the basement. You may have to do some hard things so that you're ready to take the gospel out to people. You know, I try to pray and say, God, give me opportunities to share the gospel. On Monday, I didn't pray that prayer, and I had two opportunities. I'm thankful that God got a hold of me that I could walk through those. But boy, it's better to be prepared than surprised. It's better to be ready. And so God is speaking to us this morning. Are you making room? Where will you make room? If you're a Christian in here this morning, I'm not saying that you should think about this. I'm saying this morning you need to say to Jesus, move freely in me. Show me what needs to be thrown away. Show me what needs to be moved around. I can't help but think of young Samuel in the temple, finally realizing that God's speaking to him, and he says, speak. Your servant is listening. You know, what was Samuel saying? Speak. Tell me what to do. Here I am. This morning, we need to be ready to be ambassadors of the gospel. And if this morning you recognize that you've never made room for Jesus Christ to come in and be the Lord and the Savior, I don't know where you are. I don't know what God has been speaking, but I believe that God is calling all of us this morning, make room. Make room. Make room for others. Make room for generosity. Make room for the gospel. Let Jesus move freely in you, Christian. That's what you committed to. But this morning, if you feel the weight and the pressure and the stain of sin on you, Jesus came to wash all that away. He is the greatest gift. And if you've never said, Jesus, save me, Jesus, forgive me, he's ready to do it this morning. He's just been waiting on you.